listening to The Rotating Platform. It's a podcast about video games. It's the 11th of December, 2014. The new year approaches, vaguely. It's like episode
Christmas
10. Approaches.
Christmas, you've forgotten Christmas.
Yeah,
haven't.
But, you know, skip all that stuff. Is it Christmas? I hadn't noticed. So, yeah, we're
happy new year.
Winding down to the year.
That's a weird thing to anticipate.
Yeah. Well, you know, the year is almost done. It's been a good year, really, for gaming, hasn't it? We've had new consoles, a go-go.
Yeah.
Excitement.
You better tell people who we are, because they're probably like, who are these jokers?
Who are these jokers? This joker is Alan Madrill, and I'm joined by the joker Mark Green.
Hello, Mark Green here.
And equal joker Mr. Matthew Castle.
Hello.
Yeah. Episode 10.
Yeah,
what a milestone.
I know. Hey, we've
some people said we wouldn't do it.
The doubters, the haters.
My mum. My mum was like, you won't make it to episode 10. You never do. I was like, what does that even mean?
My wife said, when you get to episode 10, will you stop?
Great.
No.
But yes, let's move on from that. I feel like I've got some other business to talk about. Oh, we were going to talk about your fingernails, Alan.
Oh my, yeah, this is pressing. Like,
this is really important stuff. What's the second point on the agenda? Oh yes, Alan's fingernails.
I don't think there is anything after that. It's mostly you're listening to an hour and a half podcast about my fingernails.
Oh, I hope. Oh, really?
Okay. For the listener, I have glittery fingernails, okay?
Very pretty. Really,
well, maybe there's more than one listener, who knows?
This is special New Year fingernails.
I have festive fingernails. Well, you know, work Christmas party time. So we did Secret Santa and somebody got glittery nail polish.
And all makes sense.
I thought, you know, after a few drinks, I thought it'd be hilarious. Oh, yes, put on some glittery fingernails. Less so... I don't think this is ever coming off.
No.
So it's now a permanent fixture. So there we go.
Well, I like it. I like the new look.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's a good look. I'm quite
pleased.
What
did you get for your Secret Santa, or can't you say?
A little train thing that you blow up, a balloon, and you attach it to the stack of the train. And then when the balloon deflates, it pushes air out the back of the train and makes a whistling noise. So your train goes forward, making a tooting noise.
Oh,
someone thought... This is like perfect for Alan. they thought balloon train. They thought Alan. They thought balloon train.
Balloon train. Yeah, it's a no brainer.
That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder what that says about you.
That sounds cool though.
I'm
sad you haven't brought it in for us to play with.
Oh, hang on. Oh, I wonder if I might be able to get it out.
Well, it was rhetorical.
If the listeners can see Greener's genuine disdain on his face right now that Alan is getting out of his balloon train.
Oh, my goodness.
Why did I pretend I was interested?
Right, this is going to be audio gold as soon as I get it, as soon as I find it. Talk among yourselves.
Alan is fishing around inside his rucksack.
Are you doing Secret Santa, Greener?
Oh, no, it's a chocolate orange.
Lovely.
I love Terry's chocolate orange.
Well, you're perfect, in luck, my friend.
Yeah, well, we can munch on that while we do the next platform.
You sometimes hear, like, if people from the companies listen to a podcast and he mention its name, sometimes you might get sent a free one.
You might get some
so,
free
like,
stuff, yes.
That's why I'm...
You mean like this delicious Terry's chocolate orange?
It's so perfect. It's the perfect food.
It's a perfect stocking filler, I find,
and
the Terry's chocolate orange.
Nutritious as well. I also love
five a day.
Balloon trains.
Balloon train. If Balloon Train Inc. are listening, then we're going to be.
We're taking the Balloon Train Inc. dollar.
Do you blow it up through the train?
So, for the benefit of listeners, Alan is blowing into a plastic train as though it was a whistle.
Enough, isn't it?
And a balloon is coming out of. Is emerging from
the. We're going to set it trundling across the table.
Yeah, sure.
Right, ready?
Oh,
how about that?
The whistling.
That's going to blow the audio on the podcast.
Yeah, so no one's see. Everyone's now deaf.
Of course, everyone's to drive their cars off the road.
Dogs for miles around. Chewing up their ears.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
So, this introduction brought to you by Balloon Trains and Terry's Chocolate
Terry's Orange. Chocolate Orange, the perfect Christmas gifts. if anyone from those two companies are listening. Great. We'll put a picture of that. Take a picture of that and we can put it on the old blog.
On the old internet. Yeah. I'll take it. Okay. I'll do that.
Right. We've deviated a very long way from our normal podcast.
Normal.
So let's
focused.
Get back on track.
Nice.
Like the balloon train.
Nice.
And it doesn't run on a track. It's just...
Yeah, no, it doesn't. But you get the idea. Wheels. Oh, but anyway, we should probably move on. Shall we? But first of all, this...
So, Humphrey Bogart voice. of all the platforms in all the world of platforms, you had to step onto this platform.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was awful.
In your head, did you think that was going to be amazing?
I thought it'd be all right. Anyway,
I've got it.
So we're here on the apologies for that terrible.
I really like that intro.
I might do more movie things.
I don't care what the other people say.
They're already saying seconds after that terrible.
I was behind it.
Hiding.
More impressions on this podcast.
Yeah, I've got a million of them.
I didn't know we were doing a podcast with Rory Bremner.
All right, that's enough of that. So, Predicto Names. This is the Predicto Names platform.
Oh, we've been here for a while.
We haven't been here for a while. No, and so hopefully our phones are primed to give us some amazing game names by us just squiddling our fingers all over them and coming up with random words that make random game names. We normally come up with some pretty cool sounding games. We're doing it live this time. There's no pre-prepared names.
So yeah, you jab at your phone a bit and let it do predictive text, and then you do the same again, and now you've got two words, and here comes a game. For example, I can't believe this one that my phone has come up with. It's festive.
Great.
Okay. Sleigh fetish. And I'm definitely spelling it S-L-E-I-G-H, not the other way.
Yeah, oh, got it. No.
That would be the wrong
one. Maybe that could be like a sort of Pimp My Ride type game, but with sleighs. So you fetishize sleighs, so you make them really nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sort of put a bit of tinsel around and stuff.
Yeah, and like a big sound system.
Give it a little bit of sparkle.
Yeah.
Nice. Ooh. I don't know what this is, but my phone just said, lettish, which is a Sean Connery simulator. I don't know.
About lettuce.
About lettuce. That's when he became a lettuce farmer. Yeah. Lettish.
Yeah, it's Sean Connery is demanding lettuce and you have to supply it.
You have to throw it into his mouth. It's like basketball. And after each one goes in, he just says, lettish. And in it goes.
Triple A blockbuster.
Now somebody could build that, please.
If you throw in like a non-lettuce, like another... You know, he just looks kind of really, he sort of goes, no, disgusting. He says,
I could quite imagine that. Disgusting. I think it should be an indie smash.
Yeah, we could probably get him on board for the voice acting, I reckon. Is he still alive?
Yes, he's still alive. He's just like grumpy in Scotland, isn't he?
No, he'd be less grumpy when he.
Except he doesn't live in Scotland, does he? That's the whole thing, isn't it?
I thought he did. I thought, well, that's for another podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for our other podcast, The Rotating Connery.
I can't get any names out of my phone.
Really?
Okay, I've got seven earthfish. I cannot even begin to imagine.
That sounds like a very bad translation of what might be like a cool JRPG.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's a direct Google translation of its name.
Seven earthfish.
Well, I mean, all of these come up like JRPGs, don't they? I mean, I can't get past the fact that a game is called Bravely Default.
That's a proper Predicto name.
That was actually done using Android phones. Did you know that?
Yeah, they came to us. They paid us an enormous amount of money to come up with that name.
Bravely Default.
That's a service we offer if anyone's listening. As an agency, come up with a name for your game.
Sudoku Sherry.
Sherry is in the name. Or
Sherry
drink?
As in a name.
As in the name.
With an R.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Cooking Mama, right? But it's Sudoku Sherry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's just gruntled looking. I thought it was a woman called Sherry. Says, "What, you want to do another Sudoku?" And you're like, "Yeah."
She gets very angry. It's like, they're all the same. Just go and do something else. Sudoku Sherry.
Risotto Chum.
That's not dissimilar to Sudoku Sherry.
That sounds like another Cooking Mama.
Yeah.
But like DLC, like really niche. It's like it's Cooking Mama's new friend is Risotto Chum. And he just wants to cook risotto and she gets really I cook all these foods.
It's DLC for Cooking Mama.
And Chum maybe. is a weak word for a friend. So it's almost like you're trying to placate Cooking Mama. It's all right, just an idle acquaintance. You know, don't get too upset.
Risotto Chum.
Oh, I got one. Think crayfish.
That sounds like
that's sponsored by the crayfish board.
Oh yeah, delicious crayfish. If anyone's listening from the crayfish board, we absolutely love it.
Crayfish.
Perfect Christmas gift.
Well, Ubisoft used to do profession games called Imagine, like, Journalist, right, and Imagine Firefighter. Like, Think Crayfish. It sounds like a range of the Think games. It's the latest installment in the popular Think series. Yeah.
Think once, think twice, think crayfish.
They're getting a little bit desperate of things that people need to think about.
Posh Iridium.
Wow.
Posh
Iridium. Well, Iridium was a...
No, that was Uridium.
Uridium.
This is Uridium. Uridium is a fake element. Iridium is a real element.
What does it do?
Iridium. It sits there, I think.
What's its deal?
Oh, I don't know.
How can it be posh?
It's because it's noble. Chemistry gag!
Is that actually... Is it noble?
No. Because no, gases are noble, aren't they? And iridium is a metal.
Yeah, so we've bemused non-scientists and upset scientists.
I like the idea of a game set on the periodic table, though.
Yes.
With, like, all the different letters are, like, a lot. It's a bit like Toy Story. The letters are like, oh, hello.
No Man's Sky has got some kind of fake periodic table, apparently.
I don't think No Man's Sky is going to have, like, anthropomorphic letters that go, like... Oh, I'm copper.
And they will now. When they listen to this, like, curses. That's what we're missing.
Like, they're like, guys, who leaks the main playable characters in No Man's Sky? It's the playable letters of the periodic table, each with a personality tied into their element.
I've got one more game name. It's quite a good one. Christmassy Rugby.
Hey, there you go.
That's a nice festive
Christmassy Rugby
festive game. That'd be awesome. So you'd have Christmas trees instead of the large poles that stand at the end of the
goals.
Rugby.
The goals.
And you could have everybody's wearing Santa suits, including, like, fat suits. You know?
And the rugby things. Ball is either a Christmas pudding or
a Terry's chocolate orange
or a delicious. Refreshing.
Or a hilarious balloon train.
A brilliant balloon train. Yeah.
Let's take that dollar.
The other thing that we mentioned. Oh, crayfish.
Crayfish.
I don't think crayfish was listening to this.
That's another round of winning games.
Another set of brilliant games. Yeah.
I can't wait for them to do one of those. What are those contests where they do
game jams?
Game jams. Yeah.
That Sean Connery game is definitely itching to be
Lettish. Lettish. That's what he yells on the title screen. You just hear it booming out and maybe, like, see a silhouette of his head.
Can you do that in the voice? You remember when you did the Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
Can you do Lettish?
Should I have a go at that?
A very poor 8-bit sample.
All right.
Give us the title speech from Lettish Lettish.
Okay. Lettish! Lettish!
Brilliant. Let's move off this platform.
Yeah.
Let's fly away and onto the next platform after this.
We've arrived at the next platform. I'm afraid there's no Humphrey Bogart impression on this one. I'm not sure there was a Humphrey Bogart impression on the last one.
There was a good show.
Everyone knew what I was getting at, right? It's Casablanca.
Because you said, this is Humphrey Bogart. Yeah. And it's not like... That isn't an impression.
I think we should try and get an impression into every platform that we land on this podcast.
Always Humphrey Bogart.
just keep improving week on week. Humphrey Bogart impressions. Yeah, so what platform is this, Matthew?
This is the platform where we talk about what we've been playing.
Yes.
It's the what have you been playing platform.
Yeah, that's quite right. I can see it now.
There's almost the Humphrey Bogart, play it again.
What have
you been playing again, Sam?
But that was the voice, or was that
was
just...
that it? Why have you been playing again, Sam? That was better than yours!
Yeah, it was, actually.
And he doesn't say that line, does he?
No, he doesn't. Well,
it's a misquote.
He doesn't say...
He says, play it, Sam.
Yes,
play it again.
Welcome back to the Rotating Platform, everyone. Yeah. And we're going to be talking about video games at some point, which is this point.
Yeah.
Alan, what have you been playing?
I've been playing, you may remember, eagle-eared listeners will remember that Mark recommended to me a game called Hotel Dusk for
DS. Yeah, I think we both recommended it, didn't we? Because
I love me some Hotel Dusk.
We both love that game.
Big fans. So I went away and I played it, my friends.
And how is it?
I really am enjoying it a lot.
Yeah.
I'm getting near the end of it now and...
Rattling through it.
Yeah, rattling through it. It's quite long. I've been playing the heck out of it.
Yeah.
It's quite long.
Beginning to talk like Carl Hyde. Being the heck out of it.
Jerks. That hard-bitten detective, yeah. Or is he a detective? Okay, quick rundown for people who don't know what it is.
It's a bit of a cult. So we need to explain what it is.
I've never heard of the thing. Mm. It was really quite obscure. So it's a point-and-click adventure in the sense that you are...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's in the sense that it is.
A compelling argument.
It's really odd because you turn the DS on its side, okay, so you're holding it like a book, and on the what is the left-hand side, which is the top screen, you've got it's the map, isn't it?
No, it's the map that you move the touch screen.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Ah,
the map.
That's right.
Oh no, that's of course, yeah. So you can see the world, which is a hotel, which you have pitched up at. It's this kind of third-rate hotel where there's weird stuff going on, all the rooms are named after kind of things like hope and angel and dreams and stuff like that, which sounds kind of naff, but then these very odd occurrences that you find out have been happening in this hotel.
Mm.
And you find that people have gone missing and all the guests have kind of mysterious backstories and they're hinting that they've been involved in various shenanigans. There's all sorts of strands to it. It's a really intriguing thing. Mm. And this story sort of release, you know, is drip-fed to you over the course of the game, over different episodes. So
I just said Matthew laughing. I'm going to presume it's the nail polish.
No, it's just said shenanigans. And in my head, I thought of a game called Hotel Shenanigans, which is just instead of Hotel Dust. Like, completely different kind of tone. But anyway, sorry. That's I was laughing at my own stupid made-up name. That's the adult
version. We should do the podcast that's in Matthew's head one time. But yeah, sorry.
Yeah, X-rated, that is, on iTunes. Yeah. He's got a bit lively. Where were we? So, yeah, each segment of the game is split down into sort of like, what is it, 10, 20 minute sort of chunks of time over the course of an early evening into sort of late night over one evening. It was December the 28th.
Mm.
1972, I want to say. Whatever it is. It's in the past.
Incredible.
It's uncanny, isn't it? What I like about it is it keeps twisting. The narrative keeps twisting, and you've got to investigate somebody else because somebody's done. You know, somebody's broken into your room and hidden something. Which you then have to investigate and find out. And so and so's lying. And there are these lovely interrogation scenes, which are only multiple choice. But again, they're really sort of nicely drawn characters, physically as well as in the writing, and you're sort of interrogating them just by choosing options. But it's possible to get those interrogation scenes wrong. You can actually get a game over, which has happened to me a couple of times.
Yeah, it's got to work. It's one of the things that sort of throws people off, because it's kind of like a, if you're too full on or that you're too aggressive, you just get chucked out of the hotel and that's the end of it.
but it can sometimes
be a little vague as to...
I was really surprised when it happened to me the first time, because I pushed it too far with the with one character, the hotel owner, I think.
Oh, you don't want to do it. It's Dunham?
What's his name? Dunning.
Dunning, yeah.
Mm.
I pushed him too far, and he's quite an abrasive character, and just threw me out. But then the nice thing about that is it just takes you back to that conversation. It restarts you at the beginning of that conversation, so you haven't lost anything. It's not a...
Yeah. So what's the... I mean, it's a long time since I played Hotel Dusk, and my memory of it is essentially like a kind of interactive story, mostly. You know, with just a lot of text. But you know, the look of it's really, really nice. That kind of pencil drawn.
It looks like everyone always likens it to a, what's the music video?
Take on me.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
Pencil drawn.
So why is it so good? You know, like what's this? I'm not saying that because I really like Hotel Dusk, but I found it very difficult. I feel it very difficult now to pin down what was.
I think it's good writing. I think it's intriguing.
Mm.
I think it's funny. You really do want to find out what happens next.
Yeah.
The puzzles are not too ridiculous. I think only one or two points I've been wandering around thinking, what am I supposed to do?
Mm.
And then it turns out that I've missed seeing a tiny little thing poking out from behind a radiator or whatever, something like that.
So
there's only a little bit of that going on. It's sort of drip feeds you in the right direction, just about the right amount. Yeah. It's chunked up, and there's this sense of you honestly want to find out what happens. I think that's the trick to it.
I think one of the things I really like about it, and I think it's the same for a lot of Sing's games or the people who made it, is that it's kind of very Western in that it's kind of got this noir thing going on, but it's like written by Japanese teams, so it's kind of Western but filtered through, so it's all a little bit off kilter, it's all a little bit kind of not wrong but kind of
it's just
delivered different. In an interesting way. And I also think it's that it is such a long game with one location. I think the actual hotel, like, you get to know it really well, and it has a real character of its own. Like, there's a real sense of you know all these people. Like, when you bump into a person, that you might not get to the heart of their personal mystery for like 4 or 5 hours. Mm. You might just meet them in the bar, and they're like, "Oh, I'm having a beer," and then you just talk about what it's like having a beer in the bar or whatever. And it's really mundane, and it's quite bright. Not many games kind of have the guts to kind of be that chilled.
To just do some chat.
So you've got the mist, but there is that constant mystery right at the same time.
But there's always something else going on with that character.
I think they're brilliant games.
Hypnotic is a good way to describe it. For some reason, while you were talking about it, I was thinking about Gone Home, actually, and just where the location is a kind of character, you know? And Hotel Dusk Room.
Oh, it's a very strong, strongly evocative place.
Mm, yeah.
Like, even when you get up on the roof, you get up on the roof and you run into somebody who's up there for the first time.
Oh, lucky I got that far.
Oh, yeah, and it keeps sort of revealing new bits of itself to you that as well, like corridors or bits.
You get really excited, like, oh, a cupboard. What's in the cupboard? I've never got to open this cupboard before.
And I keep going back to these areas to think, well, maybe somebody's put something in the linen cupboard. Because I'm that kind of gamer. I always like go and check everything to make sure I'm not missing anything.
Mm. Oh, I do love that.
It's interesting. The sequel, Last Window, is absolutely brilliant as well. In fact, I think it's slightly better than Hotel Dusk.
Really?
It's, again, very similar thing, but in Hyde's apartment building where he lives. Mm-hmm. But again, like over... I think it's actually over a week rather than one night.
Mm.
It's like a week leading up to its demolition. Mm. And it's got this real... It's just like a study of an apartment block in its last days. It's really, really weird. But it's absolutely brilliant.
Oh,
also, like, the last thing they made. So it's kind of quite sad because it's sort of...
Yeah.
You know.
Oh. It was their parting shot.
Oh, I love that game so much.
The thing is, there is a lot of text. There's a lot of sitting and going,
I'd love to have seen, like... It kind of reminds me a bit of the sort of slower kind of like Nordic crime drama, you know, where it's a bit more like human, like it's the human drama first, but there is mystery constantly, but it's not really about the mystery as such. It kind of really reminds me of that kind of, if you're into that kind of thing, I think you'll really get something out of this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
that's an interesting, I mean, it's certainly, I played it really because you guys had recommended it as a sort of unique and distinctive experience, which I'm very glad I did. I don't know if I'm... It may be a while, maybe in a few years or something, I'll pick up the sequel and see what happens. Yeah.
Okay.
But I certainly enjoy it.
Sounds very mysterious in itself,
Alan. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, like, live in Hotel Dusk. I don't know. It's the kind of thing, like, I've kind of scratched that itch now, because I've played a few games like that.
That's fair enough. I think it's kind of a game you wouldn't want to play a lot of games like that
all in one go. It's like, just a little bit now and then.
Cool.
Yeah. In amongst so much Far Cry 4.
No, I'm still going with the old Far Cry.
Well, no, I'm done now.
Oh, you're done?
Yeah.
Finished it?
Finished the story, done as many of the side quests as I'm going to do.
What's your favourite animal?
The elephant, of course.
The mighty elephant.
The mighty elephant.
I mean, that will just never get old, really, will it? Riding around on an elephant.
They never forget.
That's it. playing online co-op and then two people on elephants. It does not get better than that.
Oh, well, that's great.
So good.
So it's all downhill from here for you.
but I kind of have fun with that.
Have you not got to the elephant section in Hotel Dusk yet? All right, let's just say the last hour of that game are crazy.
Yeah, well, everyone's constantly getting attacked by eagles towards the end. Ridiculous.
Hotel Tusk.
Hey!
All right, moving on from puns.
Yeah, what have you been playing, Marky?
Well, the game I really want to talk about was I've been playing The Wolf Among Us, I'm just done episode 3 out of 5, I think. I think episode 5 got released quite recently. So, yeah, this is from the Telltale game. So while everyone else is playing Telltale Games' amazing Game of Thrones game, which I can't play because I've never seen Game of Thrones, so I can't ruin it for myself, I'm playing Wolf Among Us. I really like Walking Dead. So I didn't know much about The Wolf Among Us. So I'm just completely weirded out by this strange fairy tale comic book world.
It's deeply odd.
Really odd. So yeah, it's all, for if you haven't played it, it's from a comic book where fairy tale characters are living in New York, and they're all like, so Snow White and so the lead character is the wolf from Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, the big bad wolf, yeah.
Big B, as they call him, who is the sheriff of, you know, for all of these fairy tale characters. So you've got Snow White and, what, Beauty and the Beast?
Mr. Toad,
Bluebeard, like pirate. And, you know, I really love The Walking Dead, but I think that I kind of prefer The Wolf Among Us. I think, like, the thing about Lee in The Walking Dead is, I don't know how you guys played him, but there was a sense, I think, for most people, they were trying to play him as a good guy. But the thing about Bigby in Wolf Among Us is he's a bit more of a, you know, a trickier character. You know, he's I don't see a particular need to be good all the time because he seems a bit rough around the edges.
Do you think he's more of a blank slate or just more ambiguous?
Yeah. But I'd say he's actually more of a written character.
In a sense...
Like, I think the Wolf Among Us has more of a... This is my story. You are playing part of it. Where The Walking Dead was more of a, this is a situation. Make choices.
Possibly. Well, this is what I was going to say about the end of episode 3. I won't spoil the sort of big choice you have to make. You know, the big decision you have to make at the end. And it's a, so I can't remember where I heard it, but the guys from Telltale were talking about the decisions they put into their games. And I guess this should have been obvious, but it wasn't until they said it that I thought about it. When they show you that thing at the end of a chapter, like this is how everyone, you know, the choices everyone took, and they show you the percentage of who did that, who went left and who went right or whatever, they want 50%. That's the ideal outcome for them. Right. They want people to be really torn so that there's this kind of, they don't, they, you know, they want everything to be really hard. So everyone's kind of like, oh, yes, 50% of people go that way, 50% of people go that way.
Mm. Whilst the clock ticks down and you think, I think it does manage to do that in some instances.
Some, and I think The Walking Dead was kind of better at it. So the end of episode 3, there was like 5 choices it showed me, and all of the decisions everyone had made who's played it, 4 out of 5 of them were like 90% one way. And so this episode, I thought they really, whether, I don't know if it was what they were trying, they were trying to get a 50% on every decision, but this big hard decision at the end, it was like 47%. 53. Yeah, and it was, I think it is a decision that as Lee, it wouldn't have been 50-50. Like, people would have actually mostly been like, no, Lee would not do that. But
right.
As this character, I was genuinely sitting there and I was like, yeah, I know, you know, as a good person, I wouldn't want to do this, but given what I think about this character, I'm going
to
do it.
So you were sort of trying to play the character, because people play these games in different ways.
No, I was playing my own feelings about the character who it involved. So the thing that this thing was done to. Sorry, I'm talking very vaguely. Sorry, But yeah, I was like, you know what? You know, I could be a good person, but I've kind of had enough of this character. So, you know, this thing's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing I think. With Lee, I was always looking for the right thing to do. With this character, I'm like, actually, I'm playing a bit more... It is a little bit of what I think Bigby would do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I'm playing a bit more like, do you know what? I've lost my temper and I've had enough of this. So, you know, I'm going
to... This happened to me towards the end of season 1 of Walking Dead, where I'd been a goodie and a goodie and a goodie. And this one, you know, I had been pushed too far. I don't think it was that Lee had been pushed too far, but I had been pushed too far by this one particular character. And I took great delight in just, you know, taking the other option. Which happened to me once in Mass Effect as well, but another story.
It's an interesting thing, because we were talking about this in the office, because we've recently reviewed Walking Dead, Wolf Among Us, Tales from the Borderlands.
Oh, yeah.
And Game of Thrones, and we were talking about how each of those different worlds kind of like different the choice making kind of takes on different kind of consequences, because you know, in Walking Dead, you're, you know, it's fundamentally about the survival of a small group in a generic apocalypse. You know, in Game of Thrones, the decisions you're making, you know, you are the leader of a city or a town or whatever, and it's going to affect everyone. So you're making diplomatic decisions. But then in Wolf, what we couldn't quite place is the Wolf Among Us was the one that really threw us, because I personally, I've only played the first episode, but in my mind, I was playing a mystery story, and I was playing, I wasn't making moral or social decisions. I was making gameplay, like, mystery decisions. So, like, whose house are you going to go to? You know, are you going to go to the crime scene first? Or are you going to go and talk to this character first? And you're like, well, I think I'd probably like to meet all the characters.
This is, this is the thing. The Telltale are very good at, you know, through acting and writing, at giving you children who you don't hate, you know, who are not those kind of annoying, pesky Hollywood children in some movies. Like, I mean, you know, Clem is obviously, you know, a character that drives the Walking Dead to a ridiculous degree, and the little Mr. Toad's son in The Wolf Among Us, who is a toad, you know, but there's
let's not beat around the bush here. Like, that guy's a toad.
That guy's a toad, let's face it. And but there's a bit where you need to question him because he's seen something happen, and he's
spoilers.
Like,
a thing happens.
A thing happens.
Is it basic, is, you're basically describing the plot of Witness. It says to the Amish boy,
with a toad.
It's a toad. It's like Toad Witness.
Don't ruin the toad moment. And he's blubbing his little toad
eyes out.
Oh, I wanted this to be a good story.
This is a touching moment.
But anyway, it's very well. It is actually very well acted. And you know, the idea is: are you going to be like, you know, tough Big B to this kid, or are you going to be gentle in a way that Big B probably wouldn't normally do? And that would impress Snow White, who is investigating with you. And I genuinely, you know, like a lot of stuff with Clem, I just felt like I felt an actual emotional reaction to this poor kid who'd seen this horrible thing and was really struggling to describe it, just wanted to go home.
But it's interesting when you say that games have evolved, but what's evolved is storytelling, narrative, portrayal of character, good writing that kind of pulls you in. And that's not a technological advance. That's the evolution of the medium and people using it to tell interesting stories. That's what's evolved.
I really like it. I really like The Wolf Among Us. And the mood of it, the sort of pastel colours and really good music, sort of 80s synth. You know, not...
It's a bit like Drive.
Drive, exactly what I was going to say. A bit like Drive. And,
oh, yeah, lovely.
And... yeah, it. Yeah, I really, really like it, and I really like just spending, you know, an hour or two just playing through the next episode.
Just a big thumbs up.
Yes, Wolf Among Us, Matthew. What have you been playing?
I've been playing, and this actually completes our trilogy of detective games.
Ooh.
Sort of.
Okay.
I've been playing or replaying. No, playing the. They've re-released their Ace Attorney trilogy on 3DS.
Ah, now you're a fan.
I'm a big fan. Yeah. A huge fan of Ace Attorney.
A big fan is an understatement.
In my books, it's kind of up, it's in my top 10 games. I've played that trilogy for sure. I just really, really like the characters and the world. And admittedly, it's not, okay, you're not a detective, you're a lawyer. If you haven't played Ace Attorney, you're a up-and-coming lawyer called Phoenix Wright. And the whole game revolves around court trials where you present evidence to kind of break witness testimony.
Yeah.
Which sounds really boring when you put it, but it's actually, you know, it's kind of like a mad anime kind of style tale, you know, with the characters are kind of huge caricatures and they kind of explode with rage and they've all got mad hair and brilliant costumes. And I love the look of it, but I think the you know, I've talked loads and loads about this before, not on the podcast, admittedly, but I think one of the things I really like about it, and it's what's so unusual, is that it's a story about lawyers, and the story really is about the law and practicing the law. In a way, it's not just a good and evil story. It's not like, oh, we're going to frame a general story about like humanity through the kind of prism of the law. It's about people are, you know, the message of the game is kind of what is the roles of lawyers and right. kind of the...
Which is thematically very interesting. Well,
it is, but it sounds yeah. so niche, and it's a lot more entertaining than that, but it, you know, at the end of the day, I think that's what it really comes down to, is, you know, it's all about the kind of combative relationship between defence attorneys and prosecutors and kind of what that role is, you know, like, is it about winning, losing, is it about two people coming and finding an answer? Yeah. And I think that's really, really interesting, and it's got a brilliant... you know, putting the three together, which what this is what the 3DS version does. So right. it's basically just ports of the DS games, which were ports of GBA games. Except this is they've updated it slightly. It's got like they did an iPad version, like an iOS version, where they did like HD graphics, which kind of lost the sprite art, and they did like illustrations. So it's not quite like it's not as charming as the DS games.
These can't be very replayable, like.
Yeah. No, but this is the thing, because like I love these games, and I probably replay them about like, every 4 years, because by then I know the broad shape of the story, but I forget individual cases, and the dialogue is so funny, like the localization is brilliantly done, and like there's so much you forget about it, and like having the opportunity, because they're quite hard to find now, like on DS, like to all three of them, like can be a bit of a pain, like you have to search through pre-owned sections and things. The idea of having them, admittedly with slightly less appealing HD graphics, but like all three of them together for like £20 or something, you know, it's quite a lot of game though. It's probably about 30 hours of story. Right. And they're a really good trilogy, because Shutikumi, who's the creator of Phoenix Wright, sort of, you know, he had quite a good plan in place, and he kind of set that, you know, he sets up the first part of the story in the first game, and the second, he always intended it as a trilogy, and it does a lot of like... It's like he knew what was going to be big, or he knew what fans were going to react to, because all the characters kind of go exactly kind of to really interesting places. And it does a lot of cool fan service, where you kind of like jump around in time to see people at different points in their careers and stuff. I absolutely love it. I think it's a really interesting thing. I think Takumi himself is like one of the great sort of unknown. He's not unknown. You know, he's famous enough, but. He's a really, really underappreciated talent, you know, because, you know, a lot of people kind of discuss the nature of storytelling in games and debate, like, how are we going to push the form forward or whatever. And I think, you know, he's actually a really good argument for just write really good, like, really compelling mysteries, really good characters. Like, just be a better writer. Like, if a good writer writes a mystery game, it's really good. So like, it always makes me laugh when you see, like, David Cage, who does, like, Heavy Rain or whatnot, going, you know, I'm going to make you cry or whatever. Phoenix Wright is way sadder than anything David Cage has ever made. Like, there's bits in it which are absolutely, like, you know, they destroy you, because it's really kind of powerful, because people are getting murdered and, you know, sent to be executed. It's quite, like, powerful stuff, I think. Mm-hmm. And yet he does it where, you know, you're in a world where you could be, you know, interviewing, there's, you know, like a parrot on the witness stand, and it still manages to be more powerful and sort of you know, better written than something which is very worthy. And
so there must be a good translator behind this as
Oh, yeah, I can't remember the... I think it's a couple of people, but there is there's several interviews with, like, Capcom have got great... like, localization in general, like, really funny, witty. Like, they're very good at taking humour and finding a kind of Western equivalent. It's not a direct thing. So, like, Monster Hunter is very well localized. Yeah. And, you know...
It'd be very easy to mess that up.
Oh, it is, and they know, but it's a game which lives and dies on its script, and it's got, like, the you know, just the names of all the characters, are these ludicrous puns, you know, on their sort of personalities and stuff. But there's some really... And there's a... There's one bit which I'd sort of forgotten about, where you interview a clown, and all his testimony, all his dialogue is sort of the lyrics to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme tune, but like a clown version.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like it's just this. It's really dumb.
But that's really interesting, because that obviously wasn't in the original.
It might have been like a Japanese TV show. Like it's a very clever localization.
It's been shifted, and somebody's had an idea to go, oh, I know, why don't we do it as Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? And then they've been supported in that decision, and they've decided, you know, they've been brave enough. Nobody sort of said, no, you've got to you know, you're doing a translation job here. It's not translation, it's localization. Big difference.
It's great, and I love it, and you know, it's you know, a pleasure. I was playing it on the train up here today.
Great.
It was making me chuckle away. Brilliant music as well.
But it is possible that you would not respond to this game, right? It's not going
to
have...
It won't appeal to everyone, absolutely. No. Like, I think if you're kind of a Japanophile and you're into, like, anime and, you know, silliness and that kind of thing. Like, it's definitely, like, it's right up your alley. But, you know, I've not met many people who've played it and disliked it.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's very simple, and it's barely a game, like, in terms of the actual interaction.
Yeah.
You probably
yeah.
have to make about 20 choices yeah. in the whole game.
Right. Well, that's weird how we've all set, you know, not just detective games, we've all settled on very similar games this week.
This is after we settled on Far Cry 4.
Yeah, so we've come out of the world of, you know, the intense AAA action blockbuster world of Far Cry and just all gone into quite, not sedate, I don't know if sedate's the right word, but yeah, just games
palate
that,
cleansers, yeah. aren't they?
So that's what we've been playing. A hell of a lot of detective games.
Yeah.
Again, Humphrey Bogart would be would give us thumbs up. You're done good, kid. Yeah.
What does Humphrey Bogart actually sound like?
Something like that. Kind of talks like that, doesn't he?
Yeah, so let's wave goodbye to Bogart. Oh, no.
We'll leave him behind on the platform with Sam playing it again.
We'll leave him on the runway. Yeah.
Let's do this again.
So we're going to head for our next platform now?
Yeah, I reckon so.
I wonder what it's going to be.
Let's get our coats on.
Yeah.
And, get
wrapped up nice and warm.
And get rotating.
But before we arrive on that platform, this.
And now it's time for Jam with the Band, where the rotating platform players will use Nintendo DS to play the Mario Kart medley.
Thank you.
And so this platform that we've rotated onto is sort of spinning slowly. It's orbiting, creating a field of anti-gravity. Again, Mark is shaking his head at me. He's saying, I hate this. Shut up. Right, no, no. I'm going to persist with this. So yeah. It's rotating a bit like 2001, where the space station's rotating in order to create an artificial gravity, like in Elite, for the purposes of dramatic conceit.
And tell us what year it's in.
It's the year 3000.
Yes.
Yeah, good, got that right. Good. I had a strange blank there.
He's been trapped in here so long. And we're about to, I guess we're about to tip over into the year 3001.
This week, my friends, the committee is charged with looking at what are the best horizontally scrolling, shooty type games.
Yeah, but you've got to say, we better explain why we're looking at shooty games.
Preserve for humanity's future the best examples.
Yes, because
of this genre, because the Earth is going up in flames.
Yeah, and lava in a big stuff. Way.
I've seen anything like way. It.
We relentlessly linger on week after week. Yeah. I think I'm genuinely disturbed when you lot start talking about this. You talk about the destruction that is.
We found a way to really evoke what's going on outside in words.
And take your revenge on the rest of humanity for the bitter, twisted people you are.
No. We're on humanity's side. I don't want to cause any trouble here. There's a lot of very angry people out there.
but we're not bothered about that.
Side-scrolling horizontal shooters, which is kind of a retro genre.
It's inherently retro pretty much, although we've got a nomination, which is not so retro.
Great. But, from our listener.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. That's something to look forward to. Before then.
You've got our choices. I can't wait to throw the reader's suggestion into the flames.
That is the first bit. So, who wants to go first? Alan, give us your...
I'll open the bidding. You know, we normally choose real hipster options, right? Which, prepare yourself for that. But I'm going to go with the fairly obvious choice, really, in this genre, which is R-Type.
Yeah, sure.
It's one of the... Well, that and Gradius, I suppose, is like...
They're the two sort of...
they're the titans of the genre.
Absolutely.
If you like. R-Type, when it first came out, was an arcade game, which came to almost every other platform that has ever existed since.
Yes.
It's come to home computers, to consoles. It's now on iOS and Android as well. It got re-released onto Xbox Live and PS3 in recent years. And it's actually it's those editions. So it's, what's the name of it? R-Type?
File? Delta?
Hang on.
I hear paper rustling.
Because otherwise you'd hear me typing. R-Type Dimensions.
Alan is accessing something like a console in the corner of the space bar. Wikipedia? What's that? Some relic from the 21st
century? It's a relic. Fake memory of Wikipedia. They kept asking us for charitable donations and then we threw it in the flames.
Oh, man. Yeah. There's just a huge Jimmy Whale face instead of the words now. That's all there is.
In the year 3000?
Now. Give me money.
Jimmy Whale's face,
Give me money or I won't tell you about R-Type.
I met him once. Nice fellow.
Really?
Yeah, briefly. Yeah, he came to do a talk at a thing. He's nice. Nice chap.
Back on topic. Anyway, back on topic.
I'm not going to give him money. So, right, R-Type. R-Type. Released in 1987, but it's the new version that is on Xbox Live and PS3 that I'm going to nominate for inclusion in Space Arc. So, it includes R-Type and R-Type 2.
Okay.
But... So why R-Type? It came along at a point where the genre was established. There'd been games previously which had set the tone for what we expected, which was, dodging around scenery and shooting and having waves of enemies come towards you, but also acquiring different weapons.
Yeah, the power-ups was the kind
power-ups
of...
Power-ups was a big part of it, but also having the right power-up at the right time. Because what R-Type did was added extra little dimensions to it. Like, you had this force thingy which could go on the front, like a ball that would go on the front or on the back, or you could send it around the screen.
Yeah, the forces.
So there were different sort of tactical options that you could have. And you could have lasers that went diagonally, or you could have lasers that went down or straight ahead.
The best one is that, really sort of iconic purple and blue, whatever they are, rings that just kind of, great big sort of, like infinity symbols, like Greek letters, had a really good wobbly noise on the Spectrum. Mm. I seem to remember.
And it was a beautiful thing at the time.
Oh, that's amazing! Yeah,
technically extraordinary for the Spectrum, but so it had all of that and had depth and it had good bosses, had chargey up weapons and
had
stuff.
A gigantic ship on level 3.
The bosses are amazing and pretty disgusting as well.
Yeah, very.
I always think that thing looks a bit like. There's that famous, the big orange one with the long tail.
Mm.
Oh, this, it looks a bit like a Metroid.
One. Level 1's boss. Yeah. It's called.
It's like a dinosaur type name, isn't it?
Yeah, something.
Hang on, shall I consult the files?
Consult Jimmy Wales' face.
Ask the whale's face.
You just whisper your question in his ear, and then he just bellows it out. That is what Wikipedia is in the year 3000.
Dobkeratops. That's a great word for him to bellow out of his giant.
Dobkeratops. I mean, that's a brilliant name.
That type is great.
It's lovely. It's good, and it stands up.
You know, if you get the chance, you should read a book called "It's Behind You," which is
very appropriate for the Panto season.
Yeah, not about Panto at all. It's by Bob Pape.
Is it about your career?
Right. Oh, it's a bit edgy.
Wow, listen to this. Well, it's true that my career is in tatters in the year 3000.
All of our careers, indeed all of our everythings, are behind us.
Bob Pape, he's written a book called It's Behind You, which is about how he converted R-Type onto the ZX Spectrum. And so it's just a self-published book. It's free. And it is such a good insight into this crazy world of 1980s video game development where everything was just bodged together and, you know, just nothing was official or what's the word, professional. You know, he's just like working through these crazy circumstances to try and get this game done, you know, like literally tracing enemy patterns off the arcade machine, you know, tracing paper, you know, or like, you know, not getting any original code or any original anything.
So just, he completely had to rebuild it.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Wow.
So that was
he did an
amazing job. He's so dry in the book, just like describing his stuff matter of factly. That's just absolutely bonkers that he goes through. And I am so fond of R-Type. Like, yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's got to go in.
It's not the hipster choice for once.
No, it's the absolute quintessential side-scrolling shooter.
Yeah, in the sense that, like a lot of the really good space arc choices, it's at a point. It's kind of like Operation Wolf in a way, which it came out. It was around the same time, in the sense that it pushed things forward. It was a real like. The genre was there, and then it moved it forward.
Yeah. I don't know if Op Wolf is. Yeah, I guess so. I guess the thing about Op Wolf is it's not like
people Op-Wolf, still yeah, you know it. Someone's a pro when they call it Op Wolf.
Oh yeah, my old mate Op. I call it Op Woo. I don't even finish the second word.
I call it Ow.
Ow.
Yeah, I guess the thing about R-Type is you think side-scrolling shooter, you think R-Type. Yeah, RT. But what would you say about, what would be the question that leads to the answer, Operation Wolf?
Which game? What game does Mark refer to as Op Wolf?
As Op Wolf.
And the answer is Operation Wolf.
What game features dubious prisoner of war camps featuring women with bikinis?
This is a good.
We let it on the arc.
Shooting pigs and chickens. No, I think did it go on?
I think we did. Yeah, I remember discussions about how we were going to haul the arc.
So I think the question is the other people coming into the arc going, why is that on here and not any Mozart? I think it's the question people are asking about Operation Wolf.
Mozart why is finished.
Why is that cabinet on the arc and not my mum? It's the question people are asking about Operation Wolf.
Well, if your mum had an Uzi attachment, then she'd be on.
I told her. I said upgrade during the big sort of cyborg period of history.
So are you going to put R-Type in, Matthew?
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. It's just timeless.
Mission accomplished. It's in the arc.
Which version are we talking about? R-Type Dimensions.
R-Type Dimensions. Yeah,
I forgot that he said he wanted to put R-Type Dimensions.
I've snuck that one in there because of its extra options.
Ah, yeah. R-Type's got to go in one way or another. So yeah.
Hooray!
So Greener, what are you going to propose to put in this space arc?
Well, I'm going to stick with IREM, the makers of R-Type, and I'm going to choose their lesser known side-scrolling shooter arcade game, Dragon Breed, which is R-Type with a dragon, basically. why I'm choosing it is obviously because it deserves to be on the space arc, but it's a common theme with me. Very good memories of playing it in Seaside Arcades as a young man.
This isn't the Greener Nostalgia Room.
No, but...
It's
not, yeah, the Greener Nostalgia Arc.
Well, yeah, that's, you're right. So Alan is right, yeah. It is an arc. Yeah, you're right. It is, that's what it is.
Well, I'll come on to... So the brilliant thing about Dragon Breed is that you're on a great big dragon. So there was a game on the Spectrum called Thanatos, right? And you played you were like this gigantic, it was crazy for the Spectrum, you were this gigantic dragon sprite, like a big green flappy wings sort of
like
dragon.
Like
Pete's dragon, yes, a little bit like that. Not so goofy looking though. Yeah, a bit more not so friendly. And that was like a really amazing game to look at screenshots of when I was a kid looking in games magazines. There's something about games with dragons in that has always done something for me, and I think that might have been the trigger for it. So Dragon Breed is more... So it's a very long dragon made up of kind of segments. So you're kind of like... As you move the... You're a guy who's sitting on the dragon's head, essentially. Mm. And as you move... You can imagine as you move the head around the screen, the tail's kind of like, you know... what's the word?
Like snakes,
yes,
behind
exactly,
you.
Yeah, snaking behind you. It looks super, super impressive. And you are a dragon, like firing like stuff out of your mouth at enemies, which is, you know, like 1,000 times cooler than a boring old spaceship. it looked really, really impressive. The thing about growing up with video games from, like, you know, the early 80s is you saw a lot of games with black backgrounds because it was easy. Mm-hmm. And Dragon Breed was one of those games. So it was a side-scrolling shooter, which you were used to, but it just had a really nice look to it because it was out in the in a kind of open, it felt like out in the open. You know my problem with nighttime in games. I talked about? Dragon Breed was like our type for people like me who don't like night in games.
Yeah.
That's what they wrote on the flyer.
Yeah, you don't like dark colours in games. Yeah.
And it's got I will be honest, I wouldn't say it is technically as good a game as R-Type, but just I don't think many people have heard of it. You know, I'm a big fan of Bubble Bobble and Rainbow Islands. I really like
just
it when,
a bit.
Yes, so I really like it when follow-ups to games, you like just go, right, we're just going to do something completely different, you know, rather than just go, you know, there have been sequels to R-Type, obviously, but this was like, you know, we're going to do a side-scrolling shooter, we're going to use our expertise, it's going to be a dragon that looks awesome, where you're, you know, sneaking around the screen and shooting stuff. So, yeah, I don't know, it's maybe it's a bit personal for Space Arc. You know, have at me.
The snaky thing is highly satisfying, isn't it?
I think I must have seen it.
I don't know if I ever played it, but I certainly saw it.
It gets mixed up.
It's highly pleasing.
There's a game called Dragon Spirit, which is a vertically scrolling shooter where you're like you're top down and you have multiple dragons, I think, and so it sometimes gets mixed up with that. But
there was also an R-Type knockoff, which Wikipedia tells me, Jimmy Whale tells me, was there was an R-Type knockoff called Magic Dragon, and I had a horrible feeling for a moment that you were going to go with Magic Dragon, which is an obscure knockoff copy.
I didn't know it was just R-Type. Yeah.
But no, you haven't.
Is that an official licensed game of Puff the Magic Dragon?
Well, it's actually a sequel to Double Dragon, but in space.
I'll admit, I don't know a massive amount about this particular genre. Oh. Like, it's because it's a little bit before my time, but it's kind of, they're a bit more hard, you know, when I was younger, these games were out, but they were kind of a bit more hardcore, you know, it was kind of more like Disney platformers.
Yeah.
So, you know, today I was doing some research, and my good friend and colleague, Alex Dale, who used to write for Endgamer, we were talking about scrolling shooters, and he was waxing lyrical about Amiga scrolling shooters. Yeah. But specifically, he said he really liked games which didn't have spaceships in.
Ah.
And he put forward, just because you mentioned dragons, I thought I'd mention it, he put forward Epidia.
Oh, I don't know.
Where you played, basically it's a guy who's been turned into a wasp. And it's all set in a garden. Really? So it's, you're shooting like snails and dragons, but it's set in a big garden. I watched a video of it, and it's like a very organic kind of.
But a lot of games like that are pretty dump, aren't they?
No, he said it was genuinely really, really good. Like a really good shooter.
Was it a commercial release, was it?
Yeah, commercial release. Yeah. And he also put forward Agony on the Amiga, where you played an owl.
Yeah, Agony is a definite Amiga side-scrolling shooter name.
I watched that. It's just the owl sprite's huge.
Yeah, that is Psygnosis, isn't it? Yeah. So Agony was very impressive.
That's like a big ass owl, and it's like shooting. Like,
it's not the owl from the Psygnosis logo.
Well,
I imagine it
probably is. The
that might have been one of their first games, and so maybe that's why Psygnosis.
It's interesting to be that you've kind of got that owl centric.
Agony, yeah. Yeah,
it's quite a creepy name for a game about an owl. You think you'd call it like Owl Blaster or something? Rather than Agony.
Shahuta.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's a Tawoo shooter.
We've hit rock bottom this week.
Who needs crackers when you've got you've got jokes like this?
It's a real barnstormer. So, barn owl? Is it an owl?
Barn owl? Yeah.
Barnstormer.
Barnstormer.
Barnell
Stormer. Yeah.
Anyway, but he was just, and that, you know, made me regret not being more interested in this genre, because I thought it was all just sort of pew-pew spaceships.
Yeah,
but actually it's giant
basically is, though.
It's
really.
Owls and dragons and bees
going pew-pew-pew. Well, I think because it's... So I do have a memory on the Amiga and in the arcades of a lot of strange side-scrolling shooters that were... You know, Parodius is obviously a good example. Yeah. Really playing around with what you were looking at as you roved to the right. So, yeah, it's... I think it's a genre of games that no one ever completed as well. You know, who's ever completed R-Type? I don't know. There's not many people. Nobody These has. Games are just too
old.
Hard.
But the thing is, old Rod Perch, as or whatever his name was.
Bob Pape.
Rod Perch. Never trust a man named after a fish.
Let's not go down that route again.
I can't remember what he's called.
Bob Perch. No, Rod Perch. Rod Perch.
Oh, Rod! He's named after a fishing device.
That's probably where my brain was. Bob Pape has finished R-Type, I would imagine.
He's finished R-Type many, many times, yes, absolutely. Very interesting choices there.
But it was sort of a lead in that I think, you know, I would like people to remember that, you know, that the range of this genre, that it wasn't just spaceships. So I personally, even though I have not played the game, I'm going to say yes, because I think it's something I want to, you know, record for future generations. Yes.
Woo! There we go.
Was it in from your side?
Does it matter?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, all right, yeah. It's Christmas, let's go.
Three ins. That's good. I like it when my Seaside arcade memories get put into the Space Arc. It really is. Yeah. All we need is a bit of a sand and
a donkey.
And a donkey, yeah. And the experience will be complete.
Fortunately, donkeys were gone.
a creepy Punch and Judy experience, and off we go.
Off we go. It's only three-headed donkeys now in the dystopia of the 3000.
Well, they're pivotal to what... You know, to the event, aren't they? Absolutely. The three-headed donkeys.
Absolutely.
Well, it was the sign of the coming of the event. When the three-headed donkey shall appear.
Not the lava. No, it wasn't the lava.
Well, no, the lava. That's what it signaled. It was like the herald of the lava. Was the donkey when a three-headed donkey is born to a woman.
Merry Christmas.
the lava shall come.
This is getting dark. Going to have to lighten up the Space Arc a bit.
Well, there's plenty of
this
light.
This is history, though. Like, I just say things got pretty weird around.
Laughter is our only way of coping with the horrible reality. Mark.
That's true.
Like, we laugh about it now, but it was the coming of an apocalypse.
Yeah.
It was so bad. You know, 'cause you turned on the news and you're like, uh oh, this doesn't sound good. Oh, it was terrible.
It was terrible.
Oh, man.
I think that should be the title of the podcast. A three-headed donkey is born unto woman.
Just as though it's some horrible alternative nativity. Oh, right. Let's go on to the next Space Art game.
Okay. So as I said, you know, I'm not a big expert on the genre, but I thought I'd pick something that I genuinely kind of had played and really enjoyed.
Yeah.
It's a very recent game, which was Cinemora, which was made by, I think, a Hungarian outfit, Digital Realities, along with Suda51, Grasshopper. So Suda51 did the kind of concept, which is the incredibly overwrought story which runs between all the really good shooting missions.
Right.
So there's a lot of text, and I don't understand the story at all. But the
what platform is this on?
I played it on Vita.
Right.
But it was on 360 and PS3.
Cinemora. Yes. Now I know what game you're talking about. Sinemora.
Yeah, that's how you pronounce it.
I had spelled it a different way in my head, and I thought I didn't know the game. But now, yes.
Yeah. Do you know
Cinemora?
The game? So if you haven't played it, the central concept is that health is time, that you have a ticking clock, that when the clock runs out, the level ends. Every time you take a hit, you don't have a health bar, but your time goes down.
Right.
So it steals, but every enemy you kill adds time to the clock. So you're actually fighting this ever. So, like, weaving around enemies is fine, like weaving, but you've got to be killing them to kind of replenish that ticking clock.
Yeah,
so you're kind of really up against it. And so, and I think that in itself is quite an interesting thing. You know, it puts you in a different place. It's not just a shoot.
Well, this risk-reward mechanism.
Very much so. Mm. And you can, like, slow down. You've got a sort of an energy meter, which sort of special power, which when you do it basically goes into sort of bullet time, which makes, cause it's got like bullet hell formations where it sort of throws like 50 things at you, but if you go slow you can kind of weave around them. But obviously the time is still moving, the clock's still going at that rate, so it's like wasted time because kind of killed. So I think it's got a lot of kind of interesting, you know, there's a lot to sort of think about. And again, like, I'm no expert, so, you know, I can't say, oh, it's got particularly good bullet formations or these ships are particularly well tuned, but it's got a really nice feel to it. It's a really, really pretty game because it's all made in a 3D engine.
Yeah.
And there are cutscenes where the camera kind of weaves around and it kind of sort of shifts sort of 2.5D style, like around corners into different parts, but it's always side on. It's never, you know, you never lose track of it. But the bosses are these big 3D clanking contraptions kind of like fold up on themselves and kind of reverse and turn into interesting things. And it's a really well polished game.
Yeah.
It kind of came out of nowhere, and I think it's widely accepted as a pretty good shooter.
Like, yeah. I've heard really good things about it. Is it on PC?
I don't know.
I'm just trying to think if I got it in my Steam library somewhere. I've definitely got it. You know, I'm constantly. You've got this list of games that, you know, I'm either waiting for sales or I'm like, next game I buy, I'll buy that one. Cinemora is definitely.
Yeah, it's good. I think I got it on PS Plus, actually. I have a vague memory of it being on PS Plus ages ago, which is why I got it on Vita. But yeah, it's a really good game. It's slightly baggy with its story elements, like the levels get interrupted by cutscenes. But if you play in like the score attack or time attack modes or whatever, it gets rid of all that and just becomes like a really straight shooter. And I think it's very pure. You know, I think it's kind of got that R-type sort of feel to it with the power-ups, because it's kind of every consecutive power-up you get more and more powerful, and then if you get hit you lose them, and you can like race around the screen to pick them up again, so you can kind of, it's got like a probably more like Contra-like kind of escalation, so that when you've got all the power-ups you're like nigh on unstoppable,
is the idea.
I like that escalation thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time it brings in that slightly more hardcore Japanese sort of bullet hell thing, which like R-Type doesn't necessarily, you know, with like the insane formations.
It's not about that. It's R-Type is more dodging scenery whilst it's throwing stuff
out. Well, that's been the traditional way, isn't it? Vertical shooter is bullet hell, side scrolling shooter is watch the scenery.
Scenery hell. But this is kind of an interesting mix of both. Like a studio without any previous shooter experience, but it's a great game. I really like it. I think it's a really good example of a sort of a genre which I think too many people were, you know, it's like boutique Japanese outfits are making these, you know, like Cave.
You
know, and it seems to be the domain of just, it gets more and more hardcore and more and more kind of distant. And this was like a really, you know, an all-round crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
Hmm. One of the special weapons, you get different ships which have got different sort of sub-weapons. It's this giant, basically this huge bomb goes off. It's got this sort of flaming pair of wings, and it took me ages to cotton on that it's just the Grasshopper logo, which is like a big head with like angel wings.
Yeah.
Like this big burning angel head.
Yeah,
and it's just it's got a bit of that kind of, you know, punky kind of thing going on. But the story really is all kinds of drivel. I don't understand it. I didn't understand it. I've read so many plot synopses of it online explaining it. I still don't understand it. It's the most confusing game ever made.
We can have time to ponder it and discuss its intricacies.
Yeah, well, I imagine...
See, I was waiting for this. I was just waiting for you to say, and I think in the year 3000, what we're really going to want is...
I don't say that. I wasn't going to say that this time. I'm genuinely... I'm not putting in a game because I think it's going to teach us anything in the year 3000. Maybe we'll need space combat.
It may be considered insensitive to put a game with a massive flaming head in.
Especially when it's kind of there for laughs. The thing is though, I don't want to be kind of harsh, but while the whole Earth population burning thing is kind of quite a touchy subject while we're here, once we've left,
is it fair game?
I think so. It's going to quickly become quite funny, I think. Because we won't care, because we'll all be survivors.
Quick, at
so
least
why not?
Once we've got out of the Earth's atmosphere, then we could...
I'm not saying we're laughing as we leave.
We're not pointing and laughing.
I'm talking about maybe 2 weeks later.
Okay, so that's the justification for wanting to put Cinemora in the...
That isn't why I want to put it in, Alan raises a good point.
Okay. Well, no, it's fine.
That is an added benefit of putting this game in the arc.
I'm alright with it if you are.
I'm happy to put Cinemora in. I have not played it, but I hear very, constantly good things about it. I really want... I'd like a modern day side-scrolling shooter in, because they are very, very few and far between. It's in for me.
Great, and it's in for me. That's three for three.
Yeses. Three for three.
We're doing all right. Actually, I think that's a really nice cross-section. It's probably one of the best cross-sections of a genre we've put in.
So we've had listeners sending in nominations for the Space Arc.
Really?
We've got Rezogun has been put forward.
Ah.
Okay.
The PS4 launch game.
Yes, Rezogun.
Yeah, Rezogun, which some people really, really love. Some reviewers have went absolutely nuts for
it. It's a beautiful looking game, isn't it?
It's stunningly...
It's made of... it's voxels, isn't it?
Voxels.
Are they 3D pixels? It's good. It's good. It's a very... I think it probably appeals to a certain type of gamer. Maybe it appeals to someone else slightly more than it appeals to me. You're on a big sort of cylinder around the outside of a big tube, so you've got 360 degrees of movement. You can go left or right. So
it's a bit like that section in Lego.
Yeah, Lego. That's a complete rip off of it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right.
It's a very tight, very contained kind of playing field. Then it throws tons and tons of enemies at you from all directions, which is very exciting. But there's also, there are people you're trying to rescue. So the idea is that you're kind of collecting these little men and dropping them off the platform. So there are lots of different ways of scoring points. And I think the game, they're all... I haven't played a huge amount of it, but there's a kind of sort of risk-reward thing in that you're trying to kind of build up your multiplier by kind of saving people. You're trying to let the field get really, really busy with enemies so you can then eat through them all. Admittedly, it's not kind of quite my cup of tea. I'm not great at games where you're given one little space to kind of explore for kind of arcades. I'm not a big score chasing type of gamer. I never have been.
No.
So probably some of the kind of beauty of the game's lost on me. Not the visual beauty, and it's gorgeous. The way it uses the sort of the voxels or whatever it is, they explodes into thousands and millions of particles at the end, and it's it's one of the few things that I've taken a video of on my PS4
using my Share It
video, because you're that's pretty good.
That's awesome. Well, I think it's worth putting in the space up for that.
People really, really rate, it. So.
I doubt it looks impressive in the year 3000.
Well, not really. When you've seen people literally be obliterated in front of your eyes, digital destruction is a bit snore.
Alan, what do you think about Rezogun?
Yeah, Rezogun, yeah. I haven't played it, but I would like to play it, and I'm not going to play it if it disintegrates into flames, so I'm in.
Great. Yeah. Rezogun's in. It's a packed week for the
year. Oh, God, this arc is full of shooting games.
Yeah.
What a nerdy arc it is.
So Chris Pengilly, I guess that's how you pronounce it, has suggested we put Zero Wing into the space arc.
World famous game Zero Wing.
Yeah, best known for its intro, which coined the "all your base belong to us" meme. Yeah.
which I'm a big fan of. I like that.
You like
well,
memes?
That meme in particular, but yeah, memes generally. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah? Yeah. You like them?
I do. So yeah.
Zero Wing has got a logo a bit like Star Fox, isn't it? I don't know if that's intentional or not.
Probably. Also, isn't Zero Wing is a terrible design for a ship?
Well, yeah, you want wings.
Like some wings, I would go for.
Yeah, it's got a black screen. I would say that it's got the dark nighttime effect, which you hate, greener.
Well, I don't like
but, I mean, it really is. Look at that. That's yeah. We're looking at the screen, isn't it?
I don't think it's a particularly good game.
I only remember it because of the stupid.
Is it a stupid intro?
Yeah. I like the stupid intro.
I like it, but we could put the intro in without putting the game in. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think Zero Wing's going to go in. Right.
So that's a bumper crop of top quality titles.
That's a really good... we've got a great selection of games to play in the space out there.
Yeah, man.
And our type in, which would be an absolute travesty if we hadn't let...
I feel we're clawing back previous disappointments. Yeah, I think we're going to... The shoddy state of us, generally.
I think we're going to be okay. What should we do now?
Well, how about this?
Hey!
What? Sorry. What? Hey,
we're on another platform.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's the final platform.
It's the going home platform.
It's the going home platform. Yeah, and so yeah, that's the end of this week's episode. So we're going. There'll probably be a bit of a longer period, I'd imagine, between this and the next one So we're going to do a Christmas episode.
Yeah,
which will arrive just after Christmas.
Yeah,
2 days after Christmas.
Sort of between, in that deathly dull period between Christmas and New Year ish.
Yeah, it'll probably just nearer New Year than Christmas. Yeah. And
it's more of a New Year episode.
More of a New Year episode.
It's a New Year episode that Alan's been hankering for since the beginning of this podcast.
Once we've got that Christmassy rubbish out of the way.
Only 20 sleeps until the New Year.
We're going to try and put together an episode of outtakes as well. So I'm not sure exactly when that will arrive, but hopefully some point before then or just after then. Yeah, so look out for those two episodes coming your way, hopefully before the end of 2014. So send us some stuff that we can include in our next episode. You can give us some Space Arc submissions. Next week's Space Arc is going to be party games because it's a Christmassy
Christmas slash New Year celebration.
Yeah. How are we defining party games? So party games with like mini games and things like that?
It's quite loosely defined. If you want to sing us a song so that we can recognise it in our a cappella game tune section, then do that. And any other gaming anecdotes, send them over. trp@therotatingplatform.com is our email address. @rotatingpodcast is our Twitter. Go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/rotatingplatform. Or you can go to our website, which is therotatingplatform.com. All of these means of communication are available to you, so please take advantage of them. And with that, we step away from the final platform and say goodbye for another episode. See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.